It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 231. I am your host, Adam Mangum. Jerem Jordan of BYU TV joins us to talk about men's volleyball and their march toward a national title. He also discusses Bronson Cafusi's NFL prospects and his brother Corbin's decision to play two sports. Matt and I then talk about men's volleyball, rugby, the NFL draft, and we play the game more likely. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout. And listen to us right now. CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast welcoming back. And this time, not just as the BYU Sports Nation co-host, but also as the play-by-play guy for men's volleyball, it's Jerem Jordan.
Holler!
What's up, buddy?
What's going on, Adam?
Not too much. Not too much. On our zero to Detmer scale, how excited are you for Captain America: Civil War?
Ooh, I'm on the zero to Detmer.
Yeah, zero to Detmer.
Yeah, I'm up there. I'm like Steve Young excited.
Steve Young excited. I like it.
I think Avengers was Detmer. You know, excitement. Yeah. This is up there. There's a lot of conflict in this one. You know, but it looks good. I think that Infinity War will be Detmer. You know, sized as well.
So you guys actually referenced this. This is now like a month ago on your show, which, by the way, we may or may not have been, my brother and I and Todd, who gave us the idea in the first place, may or may not have been exchanging text high fives when that happened. But I can neither confirm nor deny that. But I will say, would you put Detmer at the top of that scale? I argue for McMahon, but Matt and others are adamant that Detmer with the Heisman and all the passing records is the top, even if McMahon's peak was maybe higher, Detmer's resume was better. Jerem Jordan's opinion.
Yeah, who's the best quarterback in BYU history?
Yeah, basically, that's what we're saying.
Yeah, to me it's McMahon. First 4,000-yard passer in college football history. Kind of set the stage. I know that what Gary Scheide did was unique. That was built on by Gifford Nielsen, but it was injury riddled, shortened. Mark Wilson was fantastic. And then what Jim McMahon was takes to another level. First bowl game, first iconic play in BYU history, first 4,000-yard passer, fifth pick in the draft. He was the best, in my opinion. If you're talking just individual, I think Ty stood on the shoulders of those guys, stood on the tradition, he's the shining light in the college ranks, right? And then Steve Young is the guy in the pros, and had a really good senior year. But to me, it's, man, with Detmer is kind of right there.
Yeah. That's a tough.
Detmer was volume and quality, right? McMahon was like the first to do both too, but Detmer was like 3.5 years of crazy numbers.
You know? Well, my argument is there's a very good case that despite the fact that Detmer won the Heisman, and so that, you know, the votes go that way, that McMahon was the best player in college football his senior year, you know. And I don't know that Detmer
actually
was. And
Detmer benefited from the schedule.
Yes, he did.
Like, McMahon didn't have the chance to beat a number one team in Provo.
Yes,
if he did, maybe he wins. Like, Detmer benefits from the schedule as opposed to some of the other guys.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It was obviously, we're picking nits here because they were both awesome. So let's move to men's volleyball because I wanted to have you on this week because of that very thing. The match on Saturday was again a 3-1 set victory for the Cougars against UCLA. They're the number one seed. Before we get to the Cougars, Jerem, were you surprised that UCLA got the number two seed, or is that just the way of the committee saying these are the best two teams? They just happen to play in the same conference. Or do you agree with, I read on a few blogs today that there seems to be a bit of controversy that maybe UCLA doesn't deserve that spot.
No, I think UCLA deserves it. Ohio State's really good. And I think maybe at the end of the day, it was head to head. UCLA beat Ohio State in a match this year in four. And I know it was early, but it was at Penn State as well, which is where at the side of the NCAA tournament. Talking to John Sproul before the UCLA match, he saw that they had a good shot at the two seed. I was of the opinion that they were going to be the three, and I was off on that. The NPSF, we know the Mountain Pacific Sports Federation. I like to call it the Federation because it sounds like something out of Star Trek.
Yes, funny. It does. It's good.
is really good. The MEVA, the conference that Ohio State plays in, was down this year. The back-to-back national champs Loyola is in that conference. They were not good, that good this year. Lewis almost beat Ohio State, which would have eliminated Long Beach State as a second at-large bid, but it's going to be a great tournament, and I'm excited. I'm actually going to go out for it. So very excited about the Cougars' chances as the number one overall seed of securing their first national title in 12 years.
In 12 years.
Really, really good at volleyball, and it's been 12 years since they've won a title.
Well, are we going to get, if they make it to the title game, will there be like they do for the national championship in football now, where they'll be, or even in the March Madness, they do the Homer station? Will you guys get to call it? That'd be awesome, but I doubt ESPN's going to devote three channels to this.
Yeah, at least it's on ESPN2. The final is on ESPN2, and that's May 7th, 8 Eastern, on the Deuce, as the 90s people acknowledge. I miss kind of those graphics from ESPN2 back in the day.
Oh, I do, too.
But the semifinal is going to be on NCAA.com, and then TBD on maybe other broadcast info. There's a tease for you.
Oh, wow, that is a tease. I guess we might want to keep turned into BYU Sports Nation for further news on that.
Yeah, nothing huge, but we're hoping to I can do something there. Let's just say that.
Nice. All right. I like it. A little suspense. So let's move over to the Cougars.
I haven't told anyone that. So that's a Rise and Shout exclusive.
I like it. Now it may not be exclusive by the time people listen to this, but it's an exclusive as we're talking. I like it.
Oh, it will be. We have to lock up some details. So I probably said too much.
All right. I love it. I am not editing this out. So let's move on to the Cougars here for a second. This was obviously a strange match. UCLA, your colleague Lauren Frankham, between sets, interviewed the coach, and he didn't have an explanation for their inability to serve in those, I guess, started midway through the first set and then went through the second set. Any explanation from your side watching it, or just think it's one of those games where it got into their heads and then kind of steamrolled from there?
The altitude's always an issue, and I thought that UCLA had acclimated themselves on Thursday, but the ball just floats a little more. Like, literally is going to go a few inches further through the thin 4,500 feet elevation there than it will at sea level, where UCLA plays a lot of their matches. Then I think they tightened up, and it was weird because we kept harping on it throughout the broadcast, storyline of UCLA is a great serving team, number three in the country, number one in the conference, and they couldn't figure it out. In fact, it wasn't just that they weren't keeping them in. They were hitting them out or hitting them into the net. And that's a lot of free points. In fact, 27 is a ridiculously high number. Meanwhile, BYU was getting pressure, taking team. Volleyball is really simple. This was my ninth year calling volleyball. I didn't really know volleyball very well. The game's really simple. If you can serve really hard and effectively, the other team doesn't pass it well. They can't set it to where they want it. They can't hit it well. I mean, it's serve and serve receive is what every single coach tells me is the key to the match before a match, no matter how skilled that coach is. And so they couldn't get, UCLA couldn't get in a rhythm from the line, and that really cost them, coupled with the fact that BYU is the best blocking team and the best hitting team. That's not a good combo.
No, not if you're a Bruins fan. Now, you talked about being the best blocking and the best hitting team. As you look at the statistics nationally, BYU statistically is quite dominant. There are also some, like you said, Ohio State, UCLA, also good statistically. But you look at the BYU's front line, they all hit over 400, and you look at their opponents hit under 300. That was before the UCLA match, so that's probably come up a little bit because they did hit pretty well when they did get the serves in. I hate to go to this because they still got the playoffs to do, but is this one of those teams that's as good as any that have played? I mean, if you had told me that coming into the year, I would have been very skeptical, but with how dominant they were this season statistically and a 26-3 record, that's a pretty good resume they're putting together.
This team's really good. I mean, they're competing for second in BYU history because the 1999 team is an all-timer, lost one match. They were unbelievable. So to me, that's one of the Volleyball Magazine produced a list of the top five teams ever, And that BYU team was in that list. And I agree with that assessment. I think that 2001 and 2004 were really good. 2003 was really good. They lost the championship to Lewis, who later vacated it. I think that this team is as close to as good a team as BYU's ever fielded. Now, they do have to seal the deal, but I don't know. I haven't looked this up. It's kind of hard to look up, but has BYU's pin hitters, that is the opposite and the two outside hitters, have they hit above 300, all three of them, the starters, ever? Because that's the situation right now.
Right.
The two middle blockers, they're two of the top four in blocks per set. BYU's the number one blocking team. BYU's really good. And so they have the best opposite in the country. They have a superstar in Brendan Sanders. Jake Langlois is an emerging star. Those are three All-Americans right there. Leo Durkin is incredibly consistent at center. This team is awesome. And it's been really fun to watch. They're great guys. The chemistry is fantastic. Sean Olmstead has done a wonderful job with his team. Lucas Slabe is a head coach that happens to be an assistant at BYU right now. Jalen Reyes, fresh off of graduation. I mean, everything's really, really clicking for BYU men's volleyball. So I really hope they win it next week, because it would validate what BYU's done the past 5, 10, and 15 years, which is be the winningest team in the MPSF, which is saying a lot. If you don't win the national title and you're Alabama in the SEC, it doesn't mean a lot. You have to win the title to kind of validate what you've done. Well, BYU's done that in conference play, winning three of the last four regular season and tournament titles. So it's fun to have a great team like that on campus. Rugby is number one, baseball is top 25. So it's a really fun time right now on campus. Even postseason men's basketball. It's fun. It's fun for us to have lots to watch and to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about their big three. I mean, you've got a Sander, which obviously there's a lot, history there with his brother being all world and now being part of Team USA, Ben Patch. And then you've got this tall, lanky guy, Jake Langlois, who, am I saying the last name right?
Langlois.
Langlois. I thought I'd listen to you on Saturday, not closely enough, who's 6'10 and didn't play volleyball until college. It's kind of an interesting match of these big three where they're just like, you know, Ben Patch is kind of, you know, kind of all everything, and he's tall and he's big. And then you've got Sander, and he's not, if you walked past him, you wouldn't necessarily say, wow, this kid's a volleyball player. And then you've got Jake, who's massively tall and 5, 6, 7 years ago had only played pickup games at church. I mean, is this, like, from a storyline perspective, as you talk to other people in the media or just as you talk to the coaching staff, is this kind of one of the more interesting groups, or is that just, that's kind of how men's volleyball is, because it's not, you know, football or basketball where you're necessarily always getting the best athletes who have maybe the same skill set, but you do get some of these guys that come through and make a huge splash both in college and then on the international scene?
It's definitely unique, because typically your stars are kind of the 10,000-hour guys. They put in the time. They grew up in Southern California, Hawaii. They played beach a ton, and they're the stars. But you're right. With this BYU team, you have Provo's hidden gem forever, Ben Patch, 6'9", African-American. I haven't been able to find this officially. I believe he's the first African-American ever to play for BYU. He's been amazing. He's the best opposite. He's probably the second or third best opposite in the U.S. at any level. He has a future with USA Volleyball and go pro. Like, if Ben wanted to go pro next year, he could go pro and play in Europe. He could do it right now. And then you mentioned Brendan Sander. Obviously, the DNA is fantastic. His parents are crazy athletic, too. Steve and Kara, they play all the time. Taylor, of course. You mentioned All World. That's no joke. He was the MVP of the World League as a rookie.
Yeah, I know.
Out of BYU.
It's amazing.
He's so good. He's a starting outside hitter for the U.S. Brendan, Jake, and Ben, by the way, are three of 28 guys in the kind of Team USA pool for various teams this summer. So you add to that Taylor, Sander, Russell Holmes, and Futi Tavanan. You only have six of the 28. So that's pretty good. So Brendan's fantastic. He's probably the most consistent of those three in terms of his all-around game, too. Then Jake Langlois is one of the best stories I've ever heard at BYU Sports the last 10 years covering all the different sports. Because you're right, he came to BYU, thought he was going to be, he wanted to play some sport. He didn't know which one, but he thought, I'm athletic, I'll try something. Before his mission, he, you know, practiced with the team, but he wasn't on the team, never you know, got to really even practice that much. After his mission, he made the team, played sparingly, and then last year was kind of a backup, kind of a starter, and then this year he becomes an All-American all of a sudden. He did not play high school or club volleyball. He played like a couple times at church, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Now he's one of the future faces of USA Volleyball. He'd like to make the team in 2020 for Tokyo, maybe. I mean, it is crazy.
Right. It's the story is if volleyball were a bigger sport, it would be Disney would be calling for the movie rights, right? I mean,
they should do the Ziggy Ansah story first.
Oh yes, they got to do that one. They will. That one will eventually.
If they
be done.
Can make a movie about two, Native Indians that play cricket that play in the minors. The Ziggy Ansah story is like 12 times better than that because he's in the actual NFL.
Or about a cross-country team in Central California.
I'm just yes.
And, like, and I like
Ziggy's
those
story
movies.
Is so good.
Yeah, Ziggy's story is, and it ends, well, I guess you show him some of the NFL, but it ends with that quote of, you know, I didn't go through BYU, BYU went through me. I mean, you knew marketing at BYU was just like, as he said it, it's like, all right, we're done for the year. We got it.
Now, more on that, by the way. So I produced that Y Award, which is at the Provo Convention Center. There's no teleprompter. There's no script for him to read in that moment.
Right.
Also, that's the debut of the 3D glasses, which we zoomed in on, and we saw, like, real 3D on the side, and we thought, those are 3D glasses. He kind of looked at the camera and noticed that he saw, you know, the program feed, and he noticed that we noticed. It was funny as he was talking. And so he said that all on his own, and we had no idea, you know. And later that was used in a BYU commercial. And that was really cool. I knew Ziggy when he was just Ziggy, that big dude from Africa in the Richards Building on campus. I'd play pickup with him. I played an intramural game against him. I heard he was on the track team. Then he walked onto the football team. So it was fun to see him go from that to All-Pro in the Pro Bowl. It's been so cool.
I mean, you talked about the 10,000 hours. Jake and he are examples of, if you've got freaky good athleticism, you might be able to, most people aren't going to be able to do that. But in Jake and Ziggy's case, sometimes the right place, right time, right circumstance, and you don't necessarily need those 10,000 hours to do it. Heck, I played basketball for 10,000 hours, and that didn't do me much good. But let's
many a church baller knows that.
Yes, thing. Yes. Well, I scored 37 once in a church ball game, so I mean that's my claim to fame. Let's move on. You talked about Ziggy. We've got another defensive end in Bronson Kafusi, and we'll get to his brother here in a second. Bronson is making some. There's a lot of noise around him. I would say. You know, he's one of those quote unquote moving up the draft boards types. I thought at the beginning of the draft he's going to be fourth or fifth round. This was like a month ago, maybe a little more than that. With all the chatter that's going on, somebody's going to snap him earlier than that. Do you, as you've talked to people on your show and also maybe off the air, I mean, is second round out of the question? Is first round out of the question?
I don't think first round's out of the question, although I think he's a second round pick. A lot of what I'm seeing, online is that he's a day two guy, which would be Friday, rounds two or three. And that would be awesome because if BYU can continue to produce day one and day two guys, I think that's important. And then today, Blaine Fowler on BYU Sports Nation said that he thinks that Mitch Matthews 4.4, 40, 4.44, I guess, got him into the draft, which I think would be good. The only problem is Spencer will be insufferable about Mitch being elite. But anyway, I want as many draft picks as possible for BYU all the time because I think that helps in recruiting. It has to help you. Utah State can't have more draft picks than BYU. That's ridiculous.
No, that is absolutely ridiculous.
And that's been the trend.
Yes, it is, and it's factual. There's not really much you can do to argue against it. We had a scout on a couple weeks ago. If he were ranking them, of course, it's apples and oranges. He liked Mitch Matthews better than Bronson as a pro. He thinks if he can learn how to get off the line of scrimmage, he's got an 8 to 10 year career ahead of him. So, awesome. I love hearing that stuff. Like you said, it'd be great to get. to get some more players, BYU players in the pros.
Yeah, that would be good. And I think that there's some free agents, you know, in this group as well.
Yep.
I think Devon Blackman's got a shot. I think there are several guys that have a shot with this group. So draft picks, though, that's important. You know, it's not the most important thing, but the more kind of NFL caliber guys you have, the better. I think that Kalani Sitake has a good history of kind of getting guys in the league. Obviously, Ty Detmer is, I think he's the second most tenured Cougar in the NFL to Lee Johnson, if I'm not mistaken. So he knows what it takes to get into the league and stay in the league. So I think BYU is recruiting at a higher level. They're going after more talented guys, hopefully guys that can, you know, stay here. And then I think that will produce more NFL draft picks and hopefully more wins. The bottom line is wins.
Yes, the bottom line is wins. In the end, if you get some guys in the draft and you're Mississippi State loading the draft but not necessarily winning, people don't necessarily give you all the props. But, you know, as Blaine Fowler would say in her show, or Mike Golick might say, Lee Johnson doesn't actually count. So Ty Detmer's actually the most tenured.
Until that's Lee, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm not telling it to Lee. And did you guys have, wasn't it Kozlowski who came on your show too and said that they're not people?
Oh, yeah.
That was last year, right?
That was one of the most memorable ones. He was going to try and kiss me or something. It was getting weird.
He's a character. So let's finish with Corbin. A couple of years in the basketball program, I thought improved a lot over his 2 years there, but still kind of a work in progress as he was more of a football player growing up. Now he's going to do both. Does that mean his basketball career's basically he's going to be sitting the bench, got energy guy off the bench at this point? Or do you think, no, once he gets off the football field and comes in, he'll be a part of the rotation like he would have been otherwise?
Well, BYU's got some beef off the bench. It kind of depends on Peyton Dastrup. So Yoeli Childs he's not a five, so there are only two fives on the team. Eric Mika is one, and then Corbin's another. And then you have the power forwards of significance to me are Kyle Davis, who I think will be the starter, with Peyton Dastrup, who could kind of, you could go two fours on the court there, and Yoeli Childs. To me, those are your five, like, core post guys. So it sounds like Corbin, from what he said and what we've learned, is not going to join, actually play in games until after the bowl game.
Yeah.
So he's going to miss all of non-conference play and maybe a game or two into conference play. That's really going to stunt his growth, in my opinion, in basketball. But I think that the overall talent will go up because Yoeli Childs and Peyton Dastrup, who I do not anticipate starting, are top 100 guys. Has BYU ever brought a top 100 guy off the bench? Like, in a seat, ever?
No.
Even when they were super young? I don't know.
I think the answer loaded. Is no. But, without me knowing for sure.
Yoli's 53. Today was the final top 100 ESPN rankings. Yoeli Childs was 53. That dude is coming off the bench behind Kyle Davis. So there's talent there, and I think you're right. Corbin's going to be an energy defensive guy. The idea of developing him into this guy who scores in low post, I just don't see it, you know, especially if he's going to stunt his growth, which that's what it is, but it's for football with, you know, another sport.
Yeah, it's kind of important. So do you know who the tallest player to play at BYU in the modern era is?
In football?
In football.
Mm.
It will be Corbin Kaufusi. It will
I
be
was
Corbin
like,
Kaufusi.
Before Corbin, I don't know.
It's Austin Hoyt.
There have been 6'8 guys.
6'8. Austin Hoyt. The only other ones that are listed as tall. No, that's the current roster. Let's look at all time. Where's the all time roster? All time roster. There's been a few 6'8 guys and then some 6'9 guys that didn't necessarily play a lot. No, 6'10, mm-hmm. Greg Garrett, who played, like, I think, two games. And then actually a guy I know, Gary Ledoux, was 6'9", and then a bunch of 6'8 guys, tons of offensive linemen mainly, and defensive linemen. I mean, he's going to be the tallest guy to have an impact on the BYU football field ever, and there's a reason, right? I mean, there's not a lot of 6'10 guys in college or pro football.
No, and there's a reason for that. So I'm interested to see how he makes it work. And don't be surprised. I would be shocked if they don't even at least try and see what he can do at tight end. Like the discussion and declaration as defensive lineman, I think that tight end should be at least considered.
I would love to see that germ. I would
it's
love
wide
to
open.
I'd
they
love
don't
to
have
see him
one.
split
Why
out
not?
from the line of scrimmage, and it turns out there's a small linebacker or a safety that ends up having to guard him one on one. That would be fantastic.
Forget about it.
Yeah. Just throw it up there. Throw it up there, Jake, like you used to do with Mitch. Well, Jerem, we are out of time, but thanks for coming on. We will, of course, be following the Cougars on volleyball, but that's not till next week when they're semifinal. Do you care if it's Long Beach State or is it Erskine? Is that the other team?
Erskine. I would rather it be Erskine because that's a match BYU is going to win for sure.
Yes.
Long Beach State's a team that swept BYU, the only team to sweep BYU, one of only three teams to defeat the Cougars.
Yeah.
That was 3 months ago, and I saw them play in Long Beach the Friday night where BYU won. I didn't see the next night because that was BYU at Pepperdine men's basketball. But the 49ers are good, man. So
they
that's
are good.
That's one that kind of it scares you just a little bit. BYU's going to have to bring it in those two matches to win the national title for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Jerem, for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon.
Okay, thanks, Adam.
CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, word.
Word up.
Word up. So, Matt, before we get to the podcast stuff, you know, we record this using Skype. Maybe people have heard of the Skype.
Nah, it's just a fad. It's never going to catch on.
No, probably not. I got a friend request on Skype from Smileylicious. I am going to deny that friend request.
Yeah, you know what? Generally, I deny friend requests from people I don't know.
Yes,
and people who have the phrase "licious" in their.
It reminds me of. Did you remember those March Madness commercials with Charles Barkley, Spike Lee, and Samuel L. Jackson? And
yes,
there's one where Barkley wants to change his nickname from the round mound of rebound. What's his other nickname? Sir Charles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "What about Chuckalicious?" And the other two are just like, "What an idiot!"
The best one of those commercials though is when he gets in the when he's wearing matching clothes.
Yes,
that
was
funny.
Pretty awesome. Or when he keeps naming flightless birds. It's good times. Good times.
Who saw this coming? You know what I mean? Think about that for a minute. Back in the day, you know, let's say when he's playing for the Rockets, even right? Did you see this coming? Did you see this?
So go back even farther. He's playing for the 76ers. Spike Lee's making like Malcolm X, and Samuel L. Jackson is I don't know what he was doing before he became famous. And now the three of them.
It was Pulp Fiction. That's probably Pulp Fiction time.
Yeah. Pulp Fiction, right? And that was his big break, right?
Yeah, Pulp Fiction might have been a little bit later than that period, but it's around the same time.
Yeah. But to imagine that those three guys would be basically on a road trip commercial for, NCAA basketball is pretty hilarious. Anyway, so Matt, I asked Jerem this question. I will now ask you this question. Zero to Detmer, how excited are you for Captain America Civil War? Because I know you've now actually seen these Marvel Cinematic Universe movies.
So I've watched most of them now at this point. Pretty excited for Civil War. I'm actually, I'm going to be honest with you. After watching Winter Soldier, I might be willing to say that I'm Detmer excited for Civil War.
Wow! Yeah. I'm Detmer excited, but I mean,
I haven't purchased my tickets yet, though, and I know that you have.
I have my tickets purchased. I have to say, I'm also, but they're not locally available yet, looking at X-Men Apocalypse. The new trailer dropped today or yesterday. We're recording this Tuesday
night. The new
night.
Trailer dropped. Listen to you in your fancy trailer lingo.
That's right. It's geek lingo for I have nothing better to do but watch trailers. And I may
geek?
Have... Yeah.
Geek lingo from a geekling.
That's right. But yes, very excited about that one. I think Winter Soldier is the best of the Marvel movies. It's really good.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, Robert Redford, hello.
Delivered a wonderful performance.
Yes, because he's Robert Redford. I mean, he like gravitas just like drips off every word he says. Like seems more important because Robert Redford sang it.
It's kind of true.
Yeah, it's kind of true. So, Matt, let's move on to CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
BYU women's golf wins its first West Coast Conference title, breaking Pepperdine's streak of like 18 straight or something crazy.
There you go.
So good job, Cougars.
Go get them, women's golf.
Taking down the waves. Baseball dropped 2 to Creighton over the weekend. They're playing Utah Valley as we speak. They've got Gonzaga coming up next. I've seen some projections that have them. They're definitely likely to make the College World Series and maybe even have a higher seed. So this could be a fun year to watch watch the Cougars in baseball too.
You know, that's something I've always thought would be fun to do, is to go out for the College World Series.
It would. I've known a few people who've done it, and they say it's just a blast to do it. Omaha is, you know, it's
Omaha.
It's not. Thanks, Peyton. Do we need to order a Papa John's? Chicken parm, it tastes so good.
I think every time you say Omaha, you, I don't know where
Omaha.
I'm going with. I was. You should get a free pizza.
Omaha, somewhere.
I've been to Omaha.
America.
I've been to Omaha. I'm sure you've been to
of
Omaha.
Of course I have. I work in agriculture. I'm there every other week. That's not true. But I've been to that stadium, just walked around it. I stayed at a hotel right across the street. I mean, it's cool.
Of course you did, because you were in Omaha and you could pick any hotel of all four that are in the city.
Oh, there's a bunch, actually, but
and
yes.
There's at least six.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You decided to stay at the one right across the street from the baseball stadium. I would expect nothing less of you.
Of course I did. That was a strategic choice. I've heard people say it's a blast, and Omaha's a nice town. There's some decent restaurants there. I mean, it's no Chicago or New York or anything.
Omaha!
But...
Omaha!
Thanks, Peyton. So moving on from Omaha, rugby beat Arkansas State like a billion to nothing to advance to the finals of the Penn Mutual Varsity Cup Championship versus Cal on Saturday. Matt, did you know that this isn't actually the NCAA championship?
Well, yeah, it's the Penn Mutual Varsity Cup. It's like the Deseret First Credit Union duel or whatever it was.
But there is an NCAA championship.
And who cares?
But Cal and BYU left so that they could make money.
Yeah.
So they didn't have to donate all the money to USA Rugby. I think it's fantastic. Socialism is terrible. Anyway, they should be favored against Cal. Cal has had a good run as well. I mean, they're the best two teams. I mean, this is kind of just how it rolls down, right? I mean, these are the best two teams, and we'll find out on Saturday who the champ is.
2013, BYU-Cal. 2014, BYU-Cal. 2015, BYU-Cal. 2016, BYU-Cal.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, these are the two powers, right?
Yes. These are the two powers. They are it. And it's really cool. I mean, they're both highly talented. They've got some of the best players in the country and players that will, you know, play at other levels after this. So it's pretty cool. I will definitely be watching. My wife's out of town, so it's going to be one of those watch sports all weekend. NBA playoffs, baseball, hockey, rugby. Bring it on, man. Bring it on.
Love the hockey playoffs.
Oh, nothing's better. I think they have the best playoffs of the pro sports.
Yeah, playoff hockey is so fun.
It's so much fun. I was listening to this awesome Freakonomics podcast where they had they were talking about suspense, and they're basically talking how hockey and soccer, though they may not have as much surprise, their suspense is higher just because there's fewer runs, or in this case, goals scored, right? As opposed to, say, basketball, where, you know, the joke is you could come into the third quarter of an NBA game and you didn't miss anything, right? If it's a 2-1 hockey game, you may have missed all the excitement if you come into the third period. So, we'll see. Now we move on to Cougars in the pros with the first pick in the NFL draft.
Boo! Sit down, Goodell!
You sit down! I'm going to suspend you too, buddy!
I'd love Goodell to flip out like that. Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Oh my gosh. He won't.
If he just got up there and lost his mind.
He's not a person. He's a robot. He was created by the NFL owners to carry out their evil will.
he's the perfect stooge for all of this because he doesn't care.
No.
He'll take all the heat that has to come his way because they're paying him so much money. He doesn't care.
No. I mean, did you
see? His care meter is broken.
Have you seen his ridiculous interviews about how excited they are about suspending Brady? Like, he doesn't care. He's like, I am making like $10 million a year. The rest of you can just do whatever you want.
Like, the time I've sitting here listening to your criticism of my decision, I just made like $250,000. Yeah.
So this is not football related, but Jeremy Guthrie, former BYU pitcher, is in AAA. He's looking for one more shot with the San Diego Padres to get back into the bigs. So good luck. It's his first time in AAA since 2006, because he had been on some very good teams and actually pitched quite well. But that's pro sports for you, man. You have a one or two off years, and you'll be scratching to get back to the bigs. So.
Well, he's only a couple years removed from pitching in two games of a World Series.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy.
But he's not a spring chicken anymore.
No, and there's always guys coming up throwing harder than you do now. So,
yep.
Speaking of the NFL draft, Matt, Bronson Cafusi, there are rumors, Matt, of first-round pick into the first round of the Seahawks. I think it's more likely that he's a second round, but when you and I first talked about this, we thought fourth round would be great. Third round, maybe if somebody falls in love with him. I don't think he won't make it to the fourth round. Not with all this smoke. I don't know that the Seahawks take him in the first, but I don't think he makes it to the third day of the draft.
Listen, I love him. I really do. But that's crazy.
If he gets taken in the first round, either we're totally wrong or they just overdrafted. I mean, he's got massive physical gifts, but this isn't Ziggy Ansah here. But Matt, over under pick number 82 in the draft.
So wait a minute. If I take the under, he gets picked later than that?
Yes.
I'm taking the under.
I'm taking the over. He gets picked before the 82.
That's crazy.
He gets picked in, so, you know, you got about 30 picks per round, right? He gets picked in the early third round. That's my prediction. And I wouldn't be shocked with as much smoke as there around him if he's one of those where somebody trades up three picks in the early third round to get him.
See, this is what the time right before the draft is a crazy time.
Yes, it is. It is.
Yeah, but you got people trading up so that they can draft the quarterback out of North Dakota State.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
People just, they've all lost their minds.
Yeah, and the Eagles trade up, and now they've got a quarterback in Sam Bradford who wants a trade. Which, by the way, Bradford, just shut up and play. They just gave you $20 million guaranteed. Like, you don't want to compete with somebody in training camp? Boo hoo. What a pansy. Well,
listen, let's be honest.
I'm serious. What a pansy.
Bradford's just got to be honest about who he is. Well, you know what I mean?
He thinks he's a franchise quarterback, but there's no actual evidence that's true.
No. Listen, you're not a franchise quarterback until you're a franchise quarterback.
Yes.
Like that's what I think a lot of these guys fail to understand. And right now, there's not a dozen franchise quarterbacks in the NFL.
No, not even close. Not even close to a dozen.
And you're not that until you become that, and you become that by performance.
Yes.
Right? You don't just get dubbed that. That's crazy talk.
Yeah. He had one season with the Rams that I think was a above average quarterback season. That's it.
What he needs to do with this is, you know, if he plays it right, he's got this season, or most of this season probably, right? This should be all about writing his ticket for wherever he goes next. That's what this should be about.
There's no next. He's gonna be a backup next. He's got this. He's not going. This is it. He's what, 28?
And he's got a huge contract that goes with him wherever he goes.
Yeah. No one's trading for him. he should have not signed that extension and become a free agent. But if you're Philadelphia and you get a chance, you think, to nab your guy. But here's the problem. Sam Bradford was the first pick in the draft in 2010.
Well, who, there is no guy.
That's the problem.
People are going to move up in this draft and take a quarterback, and they're just going to take whoever's there. They're drafting a position, not a player.
Yes. There's no Peyton Manning. There's no Andrew Luck. Wow. There's no, I don't know, who else was really most of the guys that get picked in the top five of QBs, they're Bradfords more likely than they're Peyton Manning.
Well, and then everybody tries to get all cute, right? And they're like, well, we're going to go get this guy, this guy out of North Dakota State, because, you know, and there's a bunch of, we got examples of people who've come out of small schools and been really, really successful, but those guys all kind of flew in under the radar. That's part of what made, part of the reason those stories are interesting is because nobody had those kinds of expectations from those guys.
Oh yeah, it changes immensely once the expectations are there, right?
Well, and the whole point is nobody picked it right. Which right. means you're gonna, it doesn't make you any more likely to pick it correctly later. I don't even know if I'm making any sense.
No, but you're making sense.
There's not a quarterback. There's not a franchise quarterback in this draft.
Okay, so let's look at the top eight quarterbacks passing yards last year. Okay, Drew Brees had the most passing yards. He was a second round pick by San Diego. Okay, Philip Rivers was number two, interestingly enough. First round pick, fourth pick of the draft, by the Giants, who then, of course, Eli Manning whined like a big baby and those two got swapped. Brady was a third round pick. Carson Palmer was the first pick in the draft by the Bengals. Matt Ryan, where was he? He was the first round, but third overall pick. Okay, see where I'm going here? Eli Manning was a top pick. Blake Bortles, who is not a franchise guy, third overall pick. But, you know, like you said, they're not 12 franchise guys. Who are the franchise guys? Brady. After that, you've got to say what? Russell Wilson?
I might put Russell Wilson there. Cam Newton.
Peyton
Manning
Rogers.
Before he retired. Aaron Rodgers.
Peyton Manning wasn't the last 2 years of his career, though. He was.
Well, in his prime.
In his prime, yes, absolutely. That's five guys. I mean, and maybe Jameis Winston turns into that. I think he's got the potential. Bortles.
Jury's still out, but he could get there.
Palmer was a very good quarterback over his career, but not elite at that level. And Philip Rivers might have been that good at his peak. He was probably a franchise guy at his peak, right?
Philip Rivers, I don't know if I would even say he was a franchise guy at his peak.
He had some pretty good years.
What about Eli Manning? Is Eli Manning a franchise quarterback?
No, absolutely not. He is a good quarterback, and obviously you can win Super Bowls with him because they have. But he is, if you just look statistically, I know some people say it's all about winning. Actually, you have to have 22 guys to win. It's not just the quarterback that wins the games. But you look at his stats, he doesn't put up elite numbers.
What about Ben Roethlisberger?
Gosh, when he was fully healthy, maybe. But that was not anymore. That was a short window. But he might have been at his peak, maybe.
So, but really, I think the point we're making is that
what about
trying
Alex
to pick
Smith?
Up a... See, I looked at that one too, but I'm not ready to
say
he's
totally
a franchise
kidding.
Quarterback, right?
It's a franchise okay, quarterback. Good. Alex Smith is terrible.
Okay, good.
He's absolutely
I was trying to be nice.
He is, and he's another one. First round, first pick by the Niners, and look where he's at. You know, again, he was serviceable, right?
He's been terrible to an extent.
Yeah, he's not been terrible. Well, I guess he had some really bad seasons with the Niners, but they were just a bad team.
Yeah, that was a bad situation. I think he's done better in Kansas City, and you can win games with him, but he's not a franchise quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback. And I think teams think, well, I'm going to take the best quarterback in this draft. The best quarterback in this draft is not going to be You know, but that's when everybody just gets weird. They buy into all this hype because the process to prepare for the draft has become such a thing, and yeah, the talking and all the mock drafts. I mean, look at these guys. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love to watch this stuff, but how do these guys, you know, you look at Mel Kiper and Todd McShay, they do all of these mock drafts. These guys are making their living off of just talking about the NFL draft.
And quite frankly,
they make a good living.
I don't think either of them are that good.
Like, they're just guessing like any of us.
Well, but I think everybody owes this to Kiper and a few other people that made the draft a big deal years and years ago, right? And McShay followed on those. But now I think they've been passed by analytical and scouting people that know the game better than they do, have passed them. Like, if I'm looking for insight, like we had a guest on a few weeks ago, I've Googled up. I mean, there are people that I watch their videos or read their articles, and I feel like, wow, this person's blowing me away, right? Sometimes now in the draft, especially when like Vannoy was, you know, being picked and whatever, and you heard the ESPN guys, I'm like, did they even watch film on him? Right?
But they don't. And I think we talked, you know, and that came up on this show a couple weeks ago, right?
Yes.
When we were talking about the draft, this idea that these guys don't have time to go through all that. Somebody else goes through a form and then tells them what to say, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I think that the thing with but if you look at what you just said, right, there's all these other resources and people talking about what's going on in the draft, but teams still, they lose focus right at the last minute and they make weird decisions.
Yep. And this is, you know, what,
like,
separates,
everybody's trying to hit the home run with their first round pick.
This is what separates the good franchises from the great franchises. This is what separates you know, Seattle, New England, maybe even the Broncos at this point, to say they don't do that stuff. This is what Philadelphia does and St. Louis does, or now Los Angeles. You know, that's what they do. And like you said, they're more likely drafting the next Joey Harrington than they're drafting the next Andrew Luck.
Right.
You know,
by a long shot, you're more likely doing that.
Yes, by a long shot. And they just traded, in both cases, a bunch of picks that are highly valuable to get it. So, anywho, well, we'll find out. I will probably watch a lot of the draft this weekend with my wife being gone too. So,
oh, I can't help watch it. I can't help but watch it.
We can talk about it next time. What actually ends up happening? So, Matt, men's volleyball. I watched the match on Saturday. Jerem Jordan, who just was on the podcast, on the call. They win in four sets. UCLA was bad. Whatever else. We're not going to go into deep depth about the – we'll preview the playoffs next time. But I wanted to talk about a couple of things. Number one, Jerem, of course, had a good perspective on this, Matt. We've talked about this a little bit. They won the MPSF. They've only lost three matches all year. Are they potentially the second or third best team in BYU volleyball history? Or do they have to win the championship to get in that conversation?
I think they get in the conversation now, but I also think that they've got a very high chance of winning the championship.
Yes, I think they have a very high chance of winning the championship. But, you know, all you have to do is have one bad night, right? It doesn't take a lot to get bounced. But, I mean, they statistically are just amazing. And you look at, they have lost a total of, I just counted this up, 6 sets total since January 23rd. Like, I mean, you know, and three of those sets were to Pepperdine, you know. That is amazing. That is just off the charts.
That's crazy.
Amazing. I'm sorry, it's 8 sets. I'm sorry. I missed 2 on the UC Santa Barbara in the semifinals of the MPSF. Matt, the story, and Jeremiah talked a little bit about it. Jake Langlois, he had never played volleyball. He is the Ziggy Ansah of the volleyball team. He had played church pickup games before coming to BYU, and at first, he thought he was going to maybe play a different sport at BYU, and INSUP and volleyball, and he's probably now going to be on Team USA on the zero to Detmer scale. How awesome of a story is that?
That's an awesome story. You love this stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. It's terrific. It's terrific. And he's really good. I mean, he was key to that victory on Saturday and has been key but to what they've done. So, also on news from them, Ben Patch was named the nation's top outside hitter. It's called the Brian Ivey Award. So congratulations to Ben Patch on that. Matt, I assume you'll be watching and excited about these playoffs. And I guess it's May. Their match is like May 3rd, right?
Oh yeah,
May 7th. So it'll be exciting. Matt, watching it on Saturday, I felt like I was there again, like the 1999 team.
It makes it fun, the way the coverage makes it fun.
Oh, yeah. Being able to watch it on BYU TV, yeah. Have our announcers, have that crowd going nuts, and then the players, you know, Patch had a couple of big plays where he then started, you know, firing up the crowd after a particular kill or whatever. It was a blast to watch it. Well, we have our first Tweetbag question, Matt.
Tweetbag.
So, Todd and D on Twitter says, too early to book tickets to the Volleyball Final Four at Ohio State next year? No, Todd. No, it's not.
It's never too early, Todd. No time like the present. Book those tickets.
I mean, basically the whole team comes back. If that's not totally true. But, I mean, this is a young team. Now, granted, there are a couple of other really good young teams in the MPSF, so there's no guarantee of anything, right? But this is a team that could have 2 to 3 seasons of very elite, you know, chance to compete for the national championship.
And Todd will get a great deal if he buys those tickets now.
That's right.
The only downside is he's going to have to go to Columbus.
Well, you know, you can't have everything, Matt. Can't have everything. Next tweet bag question from Nick Aletto. That's at N Aletto on Twitter. Why can't it be football season yet, Matt?
I've got no good answer for that.
I don't either. We wish it was. But it's not.
You know, people say things to me like, well, you know, but if football were year-round, you wouldn't appreciate it as much. That's baloney. If football were year-round, you know what I'd do? I'd watch all of it. I would watch it every day.
Baseball lasts like 8 months, and I watch all of it. So I hear people say that, and I'm just like, this isn't Christmas music, guys. This is football. You know, it could be good all year. You don't have to say it.
Separation makes my heart grow fonder. Separation just makes me sad.
Yes, yes, exactly. Well, speaking of sad, Matt, let's talk some conference expansion.
Oh, jeez.
Friend of the podcast, Matt Brown from SB Nation, explains his reasons why the Big 12 needs to expand. Matt, we're going to go through them quickly, and you tell me, yay or nay, you agree with Matt Brown. And if you disagree with him, then I'm going to tell him you did.
You go ahead and tell him.
I think you're going to agree because we've said almost the exact same things on this podcast. He says, number one,
we've got to make it interesting.
Expansion is a ploy for stability, particularly with Oklahoma. Agree or disagree?
I agree with that.
Yes, I agree. And he references in his response about the Big Ten's massive new TV deal, which we'll get to in a second. Expansion is also a step to prepare for a post-Texas and or post-Oklahoma world. Agree or disagree?
I don't disagree with the statement on its face, but a post-Texas, post-Oklahoma world for the Big 12, the Big 12 will never be the same. It won't be the Big 12. I don't even know if it's called the Big 12 at that point.
I don't know that they're a P5 conference.
I think all of that goes away. If Texas and Oklahoma bolt, I think the Big 12 is in serious trouble, and I don't know that adding BYU or any combination of a couple of schools is going to save them from that.
So Matt says if a league has Baylor, TCU, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, Kansas State, West Virginia, Iowa State, BYU, Cincinnati, and he throws Memphis in there, he says they're better than the American and still be able to secure a TV contract. That I agree with. Whether they get a seat at the table, though, with the big boys, he doesn't address it.
You got to have somebody in there that's one of these traditional powers, you know, that can flex some muscles in the national stage. And I think if you look at kind of the voting around the satellite camps and other stuff that's happened around football, None of those guys are players. None of those teams are the power players.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so I think you're in a world of hurt. Maybe for a TV deal, yeah, maybe I think you still make some money with that group of teams. But as far as ability and access to things and whatever the in that world, whatever the playoff system looks like, I think it's slim pickings.
So his closing line, Matt, agree or disagree? If recent history is any indication, Big 12 leadership doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt to make the obviously right call.
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah. I think there's no doubt that I think adding BYU and Cincinnati, quite frankly, is a no-brainer for them for the reasons that Matt lays out in his article. But I think it's a terrible I don't think they will, because I think they should have done it already. Right? Like,
it may be too late.
It may be too late, because who knows what conversations Texas and or Oklahoma is having with other conferences as we speak. Right. And all the TV contracts expire in about 10 years. It's not going to take that long for all of this to shake out. I think it'll shake out before that. Matt, in other news regarding conference expansion, Big Ten negotiated a new TV deal with Fox for some of the rights to their games. ESPN apparently did not bid enough. Going back to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Jeff Johnson, that's at Jeff JBYU, asks, y'all, he throws in the y'all, that's so you can understand because you live in Texas.
I like it.
Y'all should talk about this tonight. Fox is paying $8 million for Indiana football games. That's not exactly true, Jeff, but yes.
But but you know what, Jeff, I appreciate you for being kind and not using Purdue in your example there.
Yes, thank you.
Very easily could have done that. But we all know what about Indiana? Indiana sucks.
That's right. We know that. BYU warrants $4 to $5 million per game soon, right? I think BYU will get more in their next contract potentially as an independent with ESPN. The problem is they're not really paying Indiana. They're paying for Indiana probably like $500,000 a game if you really did it out, and they're paying $40 million a game for Michigan.
Right. They're right? Only paying for that Indiana game because Michigan's in town.
Yeah. Well, no. The contract makes it – the contract seems socialistic, right? Because that's how the Big Ten is going to divide up the money. But in the end, if you're ESPN, you're basing this on, yeah, I'm going to have to show Indiana and Purdue – I'm sorry, all my Purdue friends. But I'm also going to get to show Michigan and Wisconsin, right?
Right, right.
That's the whole deal. You're not really paying $8 million for any Indiana football game that does not involve one of the big four or five in the conference. So, Matt, we have a game. We're going to end on our game today. It's called More Likely. Are you ready to play More Likely?
Oh, jeez. And, oh, boy. These are good.
These are good. I'm good at games. Here we go. More Likely. So, Matt, how this works is I give you two scenarios, and you tell me which one is more likely. Okay? That's why it's called More Likely.
Yeah, you know what? That was a very crisp, easy-to-follow explanation.
Yes. I'm working on my explanations. So
I feel like I understand what we're about to do, and I'm confident that so do the listeners.
All right. Here we go. BYU gets a New Year's Eve 6 bowl game in this next season, or BYU is not eligible to go to a bowl. Which is more likely?
I'm going to go with the latter.
BYU is not bowl eligible. What is wrong with you?
You're drinking the Kool-Aid.
I'm putting on my blue goggles right now. BYU Sports Nation blue goggles. Oh, my gosh. They're going to the college football playoff.
Now that goodness.
With these goggles. You're right. It's more likely they're not bowl eligible. That is a heck of a schedule, which actually is good to potentially get one of those New Year's Six bowl. But I still think they can only lose one game max. And it has to be to somebody that ends up being top 10.
Yes.
To get into New Year's Six bowl.
And we don't know who the quarterback is.
Oh, I'm not too worried about that. I just think even with a fully healthy Taysom Hill or Tanner Mangum, you know, at his sophomore peak, you're going to lose two or three games, right? With that schedule.
It's a tough schedule, new staff, a lot of changes.
Lots of things. All right, Matt, more likely for basketball next season, BYU makes the Sweet 16 or BYU ends up in the NIT?
I'm going to go with BYU makes the Sweet 16.
Nice job, Homer. Back to your Homer ways. I say NIT. I think we're getting way too excited about this team.
Drago gets back. I think he gets back from his mission today.
Today? Yeah. I saw that on Twitter, assuming Twitter's correct. He gets
Twitter
back today.
Twitter is always correct. That's true. When has Twitter ever led you astray?
Yeah, that's very true. It has never led me astray. No.
I can't even think of a single time that I read something on Twitter that didn't turn out to be true. Think about some of the topics that you've learned about on Twitter. Conference expansion.
Yes.
There's a good one.
BYU was in. No, they weren't. Yes, they were. Yeah, that's true. Taysom Hill was not was transferring to Michigan.
Taysom Hill's transferring.
I learned about that. I talked to a good friend of mine who's a big, huge Michigan football fan, and I'll tell you what, he said the most depressing part of his offseason was when Taysom Hill announced he was staying at BYU.
Oh, that's funny. Because
he had assumed, and they don't have a quarterback that's ready for this year. He had assumed, well, Harbaugh's going to work his magic, and we're going to get another transfer quarterback show up. And unfortunately for him, that is not what happened, but it's good for us. Going back to speaking of Taysom Hill, Matt, more likely Taysom Hill starts every game this season or Taysom Hill only starts one game this season?
I'm going to go with Taysom Hill only starts one game
this season. Oh, stop it.
He's not going to be ready to go in week one. I'm not sold.
I am sold, and I think it's more likely he starts the entire season, every game, than he only starts one.
I just don't think he's gonna be ready.
He's gonna be ready. Have you heard? Did you hear? Who was it on BYU Sports Nation last week? Who said he was gonna be? Chad Lewis said he will be ready to go.
I'm
not sure why Chad knows.
Well, Chad would know better than me because Chad's been there, right?
Yes. Chad would know better than you, but I don't know by a lot. You know, he's not the trainer and he's not one of the coaches.
But he's had the injuries, talking to all the people. He's right there in the middle of it. I think he'd have a better feel for it.
That's fair.
He's got a better feel for it than most people.
Yes, that is fair. All right. So, Matt, last one. Jamal Williams ends up becoming BYU's all-time rush leader. Or Taysom Hill has a 3,500-yard passing season and also rushes for 1,200 yards.
I think based on what I was just saying a second ago, I'm going with Jamal.
I agree with you. I actually think Jamal is more likely. He is currently 500 yards, a little less than 500 yards behind Harvey Unga for the all-time lead. You know who's 10th all-time is and would need 1,200 yards to pass, 1,250 to pass Harvey Unga is Taysom Hill. So
wouldn't that be crazy if you had a healthy Taysom Hill all season long? You might get both of these things.
It is possible you could get both of these things. I think his chances of passing Jamal, if Jamal stays healthy and he's healthy, is pretty slim because he would have to outrush Jamal by 700 yards.
Yeah,
this
I don't
year.
See that, but
that's
I think
not
you
likely.
Can...
But say Jamal has 1,300 yards, 1,400 yards rushing, and he gets 3,500 yards passing, and all he needs is 1,200 to, you know, and at 1,200, he would then be right at, if he got 1,200 exactly, he would be right behind Harvey Unga by like 30 yards.
That's insane.
I think Harvey Unga's record's going down, probably by Jamal, most likely.
But you know who will be as
I'm sorry, Williams
about that?
Is 900 yards back. I miscalculated. But still, he's right there.
You know who's going to be as excited about that as anybody?
What's up?
Harvey Unga.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's very excited about Jamal Williams. I think this is going to be just a breakout year for Jamal Williams. You know, we've talked earlier about the draft and how teams get all freaked out right before. I think Jamal Williams is going to do things this season on game film that are going to put him in a really good position next year.
Well, last time, 2 weeks ago, we had Emory Hunt of footballgameplan.com with us, and off the air, he told me he thinks Jamal Williams is one of the best backs for next year's draft.
Yeah.
He thinks...
I'm excited about Jamal's season 26.
Yeah, so am I. I think he'll have a massive year for BYU, and that offense... I don't think we're going to have trouble scoring points. The offense... line has some question marks. I think the defenses and the offensive line are the question marks, and obviously a new system, like you said before, there's going to be some hiccups along the way. Well, Matt, next week we will be back on the podcast. We're going to talk about Kyle Collinsworth and where he fits all time. Tentatively scheduled, I've got Dick Harmon from the Deseret News, assuming that our schedules stay aligned, to come talk to us about where Kyle Collinsworth is. And also we'll preview the Men's Volleyball Championship.
Yes.
So thank you for downloading and listening. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Of course, on Twitter at BYU_riseandshout. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.